Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
The exquisite sounds of opera giant Renee Fleming's upcoming performance in The Hours at the Metropolitan Opera. You may already know you love her voice, but why? Why does it give us what cognitive neuroscientist Robert Zatori of McGill University calls the musical chills? Well, he and others found it's a complex reaction in the brain circuitry. Well, what if that could be harnessed to improve mood in general? In studies during the pandemic lockdown, the single most highly rated activity for coping with stress was music. Musical activities can help nonverbal children speak, help in recovery after a stroke, improve the stride of people with Parkinson's. There's been an explosion of research into the impact of music on injured brains and older brains. Older people enlisted to join choirs report feeling new confidence and sharpness. They feel the impact of music and mind, which is the title of a new doorstop of a book with chapters from scientists, essays from artists, from Ben Folds to Yo-Yo Ma to Anna Deavere Smith, all of it anchored by the editor of the book, the well-known scientist and researcher, Renee Fleming. Renee Fleming, welcome.
That's the first time I've been called a scientist. Thank you. And what a great introduction.
Well, it's a great book. And we understand it all started in 2015 with one of those dazzling gatherings that you can have in Washington. It was a dinner, and there's Supreme Court Justices Scalia and Ginsburg. There's Francis Collins, the former director of the National Institutes of Health. And he writes in the new book, the court had just okayed same-sex marriage. Scalia, a dissenter, seemed to be in a bit of a mood. But suddenly an elegant woman began singing. That woman was you.
So Francis brought his guitar, which he always does, I've since learned. And once we started to sing together and get everyone singing, by the end of the evening, it was really a phenomenal environment. And you really learned about how music has, you know, historically created social cohesion between people. It happened that night. And so I had just started at the Kennedy Center as an artistic advisor. And I said, Francis, why are scientists studying music and the brain? And he said, well, we're interested in it because we have a new brain institute. And the key is technology, because this ability to look at the brain enables scientists to see the exact impact music is having.
First of all, I would have given anything to hear that group sing Shenandoah with you, which they did. But 2 years later, you're sitting at a panel with the Kennedy Center and the NIH and the National Endowment for the Arts and researchers and scientists. 22 of 27 NIH agencies joined in a collaboration.
So that was an incredible gathering, not just scientists, researchers, but also music therapists and we artists. And we embarked on this project because I said to Francis that night, I said, I just started there and I really think that we could provide a platform for what you're discovering. I think the public would be very interested in the way that I am in hearing about how the arts affect us physically.
Well, the Canadian McGill professor Dan Levitan has written beautifully about all of this. You know, his book, This Is Our Brains on Music. He has a chapter in your new book and says music's impact can be found in every region of the brain that's been mapped to date. What is the impact on yours? You had your brain scanned.
My brain scan at the NIH was an fMRI scan and functional MRI, which measures blood oxygen in the brain. And it had me singing, speaking, and imagining singing. And interestingly, imagining singing was by far the most powerful for me. It impacted many more parts of my brain than the other two activities, which was a big surprise to the scientists. But they finally said, well, listen, you're a singer, so it makes sense that that's second nature to you. So that was a wonderful opportunity for me to see firsthand how this research is done.
Well, but it also tells us that imagining singing can also fire circuitry in the brain.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And in fact, imagining singing can also help Parkinson's patients who are having difficulty walking. If they just imagine a rhythmic song in their head, like "When the Saints Go Marching In," they'll be able to cross the street without stopping.
It's amazing.
So that's a simple benefit, yeah. But it's very powerful.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the people who participate in the book that you might not guess. Your dear friend now, author Ann Patchett, who freely says she had no relationship with music. For instance, when she first listened to Madame Butterfly, which will slay music lovers, she compared it to hanging around a street corner in Tokyo hoping to learn some Japanese. She just didn't get it. Let's just listen to a little of what she didn't get. Maria Callas as Madame Butterfly. But then what Ann Patchett did is she taught herself through Fred Plotkin's book how to listen to opera. So she was able to train her own brain to understand music.
Exactly. And she has fallen in love with it. And of course, the book Bel Canto was the result of it.
Well, you sang in the film version of Bel Canto, the book that came of her discovering that she could teach herself to open her brain to music.
And what I love about her chapter is for Bel Canto fans, she really tells the story of how she wrote the book and how she engaged with music for the book.
It's wonderful. And then you have music psychotherapist Stacey Yeldell, I think is how it's pronounced.
That's right.
She's working in a hospital where she comes upon a little boy who's very angry about the terrible pain he's suffering of sickle cell disease. And the key she found for him, you know, she says as a music therapist, you can't just play Kumbaya and everybody will feel better. You have to find
right.
the thing that helps people into their own brains. And for him, it was letting him sing along to the Swedish novelty hit, "What Does the Fox Say?" Now, we know it irritates some people, but it let this little boy scream. Let's hear just a little.
What the fox say? What does the fox say?
Pain is what is very much impacted by music. And in fact, there's a huge focus on research in terms of pain and Yoko Bratt's chapter, which is all about that. They don't really know exactly what mechanism is occurring now with that, but they do know music reduces pain. And I have a friend who actually had a brain bleed, and the only thing that alleviated her excruciating pain at first was the loudest possible music she could play.
Huh.
So it's possible that that's what was interrupting his pain as well.
Well, then there's Mickey Hart of the Grateful Dead, who was at the Institute for Music and Neurological Function in New York, and he joined forces with Oliver Sacks, the late Oliver Sacks. They testified in Congress, and that brings us to Concetta Tomaino, who co-founded the Institute of Music and Neurological Function with neurologist Oliver Sacks. She writes about how music can serve as a bridge to people who have dementia. Talk a little about that.
Music and memory are so completely linked. You know, we remember events in our lives. If we hear just a snippet of a song, we're back at our wedding, we're back at any number of events. With people with Alzheimer's disease, it is the last memory to stay because this memory area, as it pertains to music, is the last area of the brain that's impacted by the disease. So she's been trying to kind of prolong the sustainability of memory attached to music memories.
Yeah.
Somebody came up to me after the Kennedy Center honors and said, you know, I just want to say I heard one of your presentations and my dad was really becoming difficult and becoming a little bit violent. And we remembered suddenly, because of what you said, that he was an opera lover and we put on opera and he calmed down and he smiled and we've been playing it ever since. It's made a huge difference in his just mood and state. And so it can alleviate life for caregivers as well.
I was wondering, and by the way, I saw you in Der Rosenkavalier at the Met. I don't know how people like you in the rarefied air you are singing in, I don't know how you make it through the emotion.
For me, in performing, it's a release. I've worked through my own life problems half the time through the roles that I sing. You know, I used to say, thank you for that role. This was perfect timing.
But I was wondering, having heard you say that people come to you and say your voice affects or opera affects their loved ones, all this knowledge that you now have, has it changed the way you sing? Do you feel like a responsibility, you know, that knowing that you might be rewiring someone's brain? I mean, I don't mean to be flip. Has it changed the way you approach it?
It doesn't change the way I sing, but for instance, I now tell the audience that our brain waves are aligning as we are in this space together, mm-hmm. having a shared musical experience. That's why they've now shown that singing in a choir is more impactful than singing alone. Mm-hmm. And how this work has changed me is that I am living my life now being mindful of the fact that I need these artistic experiences, things that I thought were extra. If I have time, I'll go to a concert. I now prioritize them in my life, and I see a huge difference in my state of mind. Hmm. Less anxiety, I'm much happier. And so, yeah, I'm like a living example of how this works.
Yeah. Renee Fleming, and again, the new book, Music and Mind, Harnessing the Arts for Health and Wellness. Renee Fleming is the editor. Renee Fleming, thank you so much.
Thank you, Robin. Wonderful speaking with you.
Renee Fleming in the film Bel Canto. Oh,